Welcome to Seeing Beyond Risk, a podcast series from the Canadian Institute of Actuaries. My name is Pingpeng Lin, and I will be your host for this episode today. We would like to remind you that we have plenty of past episodes, so please subscribe and catch up on some of that you may have missed. We can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and your other favorite podcast platforms. In today's episode, I have Kai Kuffold, DAV, which is the designation for the Fellow of the German Actuarial Society. And Kai is the Managing Director of ADRES, which is an actuarial consulting firm based out of Cologne, Germany. Kai's firm specializes in insurance and reinsurance consulting, particularly in the longevity space. His firm was commissioned by the CIA Mortality Improvement Project Oversight Group to research and update the population mortality improvement assumptions suitable for Canada. So Kai, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Ping.
All right, Kai, so let's start off by sharing a little bit about yourself. What's your background and what do you do professionally?
Well, first of all, a warm welcome from my side as well to everybody who's listening. I'm a German actuary. I originally trained as a physicist and then stumbled into insurance because I could also speak English. In Germany, that's not that common for mathematicians and physicists, at least not back in the day. As you mentioned, I run my own consulting firm. And before that, I was at Manulife within the reinsurance division running the European life retrocession business for Manulife. So I spent a couple of years working from the head office in Toronto and acquired some on-the-ground Canadian experience and then moved to Germany to work in the German office and ended up running it up until 2011. And then I started my own consulting firm. As retrocessioners, we were always very much focused on mortality because that's a portable risk across the globe. It's a very similar phenomenon. And it has the advantage that you don't need to know too much about the social security and other environment within different jurisdictions that affect health insurance or disability insurance or other risks. So mortality is what is easiest for retrocessionaires to actually take on. And retrocessionaires are the reinsurers to reinsurers, who in turn are insurers to insurers. So it's like insurance cubed. And by the time risk gets to us, it needs to pass through a number of hands. So mortality is the thing that we focused on most. And when I started my own firm, I literally continued on the same types of projects that I was working on at Manulife, which had to do with longevity risk market in the United Kingdom, in the UK. And that's a buoyant market, especially today. That it's an increasing number of transactions of increasing size. And you need to really understand mortality trends very well. So that's how I got involved in mortality trends and mortality projections.
So I guess that makes complete sense then that the CIA selected your firm to conduct this study. So could you share some context on the various organizations and people involved in carrying out this MI research project?
Certainly. Besides my own firm and the actuarial students that work for me, I was very lucky to be able to collaborate with a couple of friends of mine who are professors at a nearby university, the University of Applied Sciences in Koblenz. That's just up the River Rhine from here in Cologne. They had just recently supervised a thesis that studied different mortality projection models. And because that was my go-to topic and a very important topic, and because the CIA had just put out the request for proposal, we had a crazy idea that we might, as Germans, volunteer to or put our hat in the ring to support the Canadian Institute of Actuaries in understanding mortality trends and to come up with a new projection scale. Those two professors from the university, and I think it ended up being two or three of their students who wrote theses on the same topic, as well as a varying number of actuarial students from my group. I think in total there were four participants besides the three senior people, Dr. Martina Brück, Dr. Klaus Neithardt, and myself, who are essentially the leaders for the research team.
Very large group project, it sounds like. So then let's get into the report a little bit. I did have a chance to go through it. It was definitely a thorough report, quite extensive. When I went through it, there was discussions of the various types of mortality models the team had considered, along with the various data sources that you folks had looked at to construct the proposed scale and the approach. So could you just walk us through the research process in coming up with this new scale?
Yeah, I think the key thing that we had in mind when we set out on this project, and that we're very closely aligned with the project oversight group, is that we wanted to try and conduct as rigorous a research study as possible and investigate all the best practices that are around understanding academic approaches to mortality projections, but also understanding how different professions around the globe, in particular the UK and the United States, how actuaries in other countries actually project mortality, and find out which of those methods would be most appropriate to apply to Canadian mortality experience. So the idea was we started out doing a literature review, making sure that we had a good overview of everything that was out there, anything that we could do. We were very fortunate to be able to piggyback off some work that Society of Actuaries had commissioned a couple of years earlier, which was very useful. They had done a similar review for the US, and we were able to pick up on that and then take all the more recent papers that have been published as well. In the end, we shortlisted, I think it was 14 different mortality models. It's a short list. And we decided that we would focus on population mortality rather than taking the pensioner data that we had available from CPP and QPP, the Canada Pension Plan and the Quebec Pension Plan, as well as data that the Office of the Chief Actuary had provided us from their then most recent actuarial study of the Old Age Security Plan for Canada. So we had pensioner data, old age data from Canada, and we had population data from the Human Mortality Database, which also uses data sources from Canada, from Stats Canada and other Canadian data sources. The reason why we focused on population data was because that was the only real place to go for a consistent long-term time series of data. The CPP and the QPP started in the late 60s and only built up over time. So we would have only been able to use data from the mid 80s over the entire age range. So for that reason, we decided against using those two data sources as the underlying basis for the projection scale. But we did benchmark the projection scale in our models on those data sources as well. Okay. So we had a whole laundry list of different models to try out and apply to the population data. And then we discussed with the project oversight group which criteria we would use to select the best model. Because that's not a simple question. But those model choice criteria were actually obviously the most important ingredient to then selecting the one that does the best job. And what we ended up doing was balancing goodness of fit with robustness of the model. Those are the two overarching themes within the model choice criteria. The goodness of fit is important so that we have a model that describes what actually happened. So it describes the historical data well and is able to capture those features in the data that we think are important. Whereas robustness is important if you're actually using a model. You want to make sure that it doesn't change just if you add one more year of data, for instance, or it doesn't change too much. But it's very important that the model is not too sensitive to small changes in the data. Obviously, if there are massive changes and those persist over time, you also want the model to change, but that would still be a robust model rather than seesawing a lot. Robustness and goodness of fit, that's what the project oversight group and the research team agreed. And maybe you can already get the idea that we had a very in-depth discussion with the project oversight group. We literally had monthly meetings where we would not just report on progress, but present results and discuss results, and then jointly decide on what the next steps in the research were. Over the course of a number of years, actually, I was going back to my notes. We started on this journey back in the fall of 2020. We were all wearing masks and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we properly launched the project in 2021. And over the course of the 2 years, 2021 and 2022, we worked very closely with the POG, literally having 1 to 2 hour calls every month to present our results and to discuss them.
Right. And so you were just whittling down the list, the short list of 14 models down to, I think it was one or two. at the end?
The shortlist was three and then two. So we had our favorite model and the runner-up, and they, interestingly enough, the model that we decided would be the most appropriate to model Canadian population mortality trends was the so-called age period cohort improvement model, also known as the APCI model. Some also call it the integrated APC model, but be that as it may, that happens also to be the model that the UK actuaries within the continuous mortality investigation group, the one that they use to interpret the history, to interpret historical data. So that was our favorite one. And the runner-up was the APC model without the integration. It's a simpler model and it was more robust, but it didn't quite capture the underlying features as well as the APCI model.
Could you just kind of explain really briefly to listeners the difference between the integrated and the non-integrated version?
Yeah. In very simply, the one, the integrated model is focused more on the improvements. So it's essentially looking at the differences from one year to the next. What we're modeling is mortality rates, or even better, logarithmic mortality rates. And we're essentially modeling the changes in these rates over time, with taking into account the different age shape of mortality, which is obviously very important, but also differences in mortality trends by cohort, by year of birth cohort. So we're looking at the age period for the time trend and cohort. That's where the APC comes from. And the integrated model also has an embedded assumption about what the overall trend looks like. So the APCI model assumes the overarching trend is a linear change in logarithmic mortality rates, which is a factorial if you then take the exponential function. So it's this linear assumption is pretty much the simplest and the go-to assumption when you're projecting mortality into the future, but it is somewhat restrictive as well. That's why it was quite useful to also consider the runner-up model, the APC model, where you don't make any initial assumptions about what's actually going to happen within the future. You literally create a set of parameters that describe the mortality trend over time, so the history, and then you decide how you want to project it once you've fitted the model.
Okay. So then what would you work at, because it is definitely an extensive research paper. So could you just summarize some of the major findings or interesting takeaways that you think Canadian actuaries could take away, you know, immediately just from the study, the report, and just the scale itself?
It's a lot of questions. And I know it's a long report. It's about to be published, but I was already quite proud of the fact that I managed to keep it down to less than 100 pages.
Yeah.
So I'll give you the highlights of what's in the report, and then maybe the things that we learned during the research process that would also be interesting to actuaries, if that's okay.
Yeah, just like little breadcrumbs. So once people go through the report, they could be like, oh yeah, yeah, I remember kind of mentioning that on the episode.
For sure, that's a good plan. So after having figured out the question of which models to actually look at and which data to use and which criteria we would use to select those models, we ended up looking at this APCI model and the APC model and what the results would be when we project those into the future. And these models, they're stochastic mortality projection models. So you can generate stochastic scenarios. So you don't just have a single estimate projection, but you have a whole range of different scenarios with varying degrees of likelihood. The key thing that we did is once we actually had these stochastic models, we used those to come up with a long-term mortality improvement assumption. So rather than taking the CMI method that the UK actuaries use, where they fit a model to the history and come up with what they think the current mortality improvements are and how they split into age, period, and cohort components, and then project those current mortality improvement rates into the future towards a deterministic long-term rate, our idea was to actually use our best model to come up with what the long-term rate would be if you use that model. Mm. So essentially, we're trying to reconcile a deterministic and a stochastic view. So I think that's the key, that's the centerpiece of the report, trying to understand that, or understanding that we have on the one hand, the stochastic mortality projections that tell you what the probability is of a certain scenario, and then equating that to a deterministic view. Okay, what's our best guess, what the long-term rate would be? The second thing to understand about that is that it's really useful to have that deterministic view for a number of reasons. First of all, you can actually talk about it, right? It's really difficult to talk about what the result of a stochastic model is. You actually just have to run the model and say, okay, that's my annuity factor, right?
It could be anywhere in between this, these two lines, right?
Yeah. My best estimate is between these two far apart points. But if I'm talking about a long-term rate a single long-term rate, it's much easier to actually compare notes and say, okay, this sounds reasonable to me, or this doesn't sound reasonable to me. The other advantage is that when you apply the APC model or the APCI model, you're essentially decomposing mortality trends into those three components: the age component, period component, and the cohort component. And by the way, that's maybe as one of the takeaways for actuaries when they read the reports or when you're listening, there is a clear cohort effect in Canadian mortality trends. It's undeniable. You can, it's in one of the first pages, we show the picture of this is the raw mortality data in Canadian males and females. And especially for males, you see a very strong cohort effect. So you can't not have that in there. However, it makes it the future projections relatively volatile. So you've got mortality improvements that vary a lot by cohort and by different age group. And as we were just saying, it's a stochastic projection. And the further out into the future you get, the more uncertain it becomes. So the advantage of having a single average rate that you think is going to apply sometime in the future, let's say in 30 years, is that you're kind of smoothing out. You're taking an average over all these different age and cohort dependent rates, because the further out into the future you get, the less certain you can be that they're going to be that different. The honest scientific approach is to say, I don't know any better and I shouldn't be providing spurious accuracy. So I should provide the simplest answer possible, which is a single rate. Mm-hmm. So that was the other motivation to actually come up with a deterministic rate, apart from the fact that it's useful for actuaries to talk about.
Right. Yeah. I think, like you touched on earlier, something like back with the MI 2017, the long-term rate, I believe it was selected based on quite a bit of judgment, really, looking at a little bit of historical information. But it sounds like with this new approach that's described in the research report, you're putting some quantitative framework around getting to that long-term assumption. Now, we should probably just define real quick, though, age, period, and cohort. Just real quickly, those three items, how do they differ from one another?
So that's actually a fairly simple concept. If you look at the mortality improvement surface, if you look at the mortality improvements that actually occurred in the past, and you plot them by age and by calendar year, by time, you'll see that there are vertical patterns, horizontal patterns, and diagonal patterns. So depending on what your axis is, assuming your x-axis, the horizontal line is your time, that means any vertical differences in mortality improvement will be period related. And we actually expect mortality to fluctuate by calendar year. We saw that most recently there were massive spikes in mortality through the pandemic, but also just in normal years, you'll always see one year having higher or lower mortality improvements than the other, depending on how bad the flu season was and whether it was this side or the other side of New Year's. So you'll get a lot of volatility in mortality trends over time. So that's the period effect. Age effect is that you'll see that different age groups are affected by mortality trends differently. And you'll see some age groups having a higher or lower mortality improvements during different phases. If you look at the original data, you can see very clearly that there was a really bad mortality deterioration for young males during the AIDS epidemic. You can also see in most recent years that there's a strong age component to the opioid crisis. You can see mortality getting really worse again for the younger adults, but both males and females. So I would call that age, the strongest age effects that jump out at you. But there are differences in how mortality improvements over time have affected different age groups. Different treatments are becoming available for heart disease, for instance, or different cancer treatments have an impact on delaying death. So those would be age related. And then you've got the famous cohort effect, which was discovered at the beginning of the 21st century. It was actually when the UK actuary started talking about it first, because their Office of National Statistics had put out data on the entire century. And of course, that's what actuaries do. As soon as they get data, they take a look at what it tells them. And they saw that there were cohorts that had higher mortality improvements than the people born earlier or later. There was this golden cohort that was born in the 1930s and 40s that apparently were the beneficiaries of all the different mortality improvement, medical advances and improvements in health behavior over the entire century. So this cohort effect is also quite pronounced in Canada, and you can see it quite clearly in the raw data. So those are the three components. And it's important when you're trying to interpret historical data, whether your improvement that you're seeing is actually, or to decompose the improvement that you see into those three components to be able to come up with an idea of what you might assume happens in the future.
Right. And my recollection was from your report, you had all these heat maps and showing exactly what you're just describing. And you can see, based on the colors, some of these patterns that's jumping out based on the age, period, and cohort effects. So definitely quite interesting when I saw that. How would you then say this proposed new scale would compare to what's currently quite actively being used in the industry? So like on the pension side, I presume it's the CPMB, and then on the life insurance side, it tends to be the MI 2017.
I mean, the first thing, and that's the whole idea of why the CIA created the Project Oversight Group back in 2020 in the first place, is both of those scales already had a couple of years on their back, and new data had emerged, and we wanted to incorporate the newest data available. So when we started out back in 2021, the most recent data was 2019. And even though it took for a number of years to actually complete the research, we stuck with 2019 as the jump off year because we wanted to avoid any distortions that might occur through the COVID spike in mortality rates. That's quite obvious. So the first difference is when using more recent data. The second difference is that we have used stochastic mortality model to understand or interpret the history. So rather than mechanically smoothing the data or taking averages for different age groups, like was done for CPMB or the MI 2017, we applied a model that's best practice both in the academic literature and across the globe in terms of different actuarial professions. So trying to use a model to understand and interpret the data. And the third thing is that we're obviously projecting further into the future. We've got a later jump off point, and then we're projecting, I think, 50 years or more into the future. But the long term rate that we're suggesting is scheduled to kick in around 30 years from the jump off point. And that's something that we also tested quite rigorously. We tested various different choices that we could have made for that convergence period from the current improvements to the long term rate. And 30 years that's reasonably consistent with what MI 2017 did. I think it was a little bit shorter, but roughly the same period. And the key thing is we did a lot of scenario testing on the side on making that decision. The last, probably the biggest difference is that the long-term rate that we're proposing is higher than what CPMB used and what the MI 2017 used. The MI 2017 uses 1% long-term rate for males and females. CPMB is 0.8%, so it's even lower, which means that pension liabilities valued using CPMB are going to be lower than using the new scale. But we found that a lower rate, the 1.3, that our proposed best estimate could not reasonably be justified. So that's probably the biggest difference between the existing scales and the new scale that we're proposing.
Okay, so you were saying 1.3 is sort of suggested in the report, but that's already tend to be on the lower end of what the model was indicating in terms of the confidence level that was there.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. When you take the APCI model, which, as I said, implies that you're assuming a linear projection into the future, so an average mortality improvement rate for each age indefinitely, then what you get as an average between the long-term rate for males and the long-term rate for females is something between 1.4 and 1.5%, with males having higher average mortality improvement rates of something like 1.5 or 6, and females something in the order of 1.3%. So in other words, when you use the APCI model that we suggest is the best one, given the data and given our model choice criteria, you get an even higher rate, an even higher long-term rate. But that's not taking into account any slowdown in mortality improvements that is actually observed around 2011. Depending on which smoothing method you use, it's debatable whether it's 2010 or 2012. But around about that time, mortality improvements appeared to slow down in the Canadian population. And I believe that's also the case in a variety of different pension scheme data as well. If we take into account that mortality has not been improving linearly, but that there's been a bit of a slowdown, then it's possibly more appropriate to use a higher order time series model than just a straight linear trend, which, by the way, is consistent with a random walk that you might have heard of. Like, the random walk is essentially with a random walk with drift essentially assumes that you keep going down. And another name that I know for it is the drunken man's walk. It's a drunken sailor's walk on the way down to the harbor. You're on a downhill slope, and you're not quite sure which pub you end up in. Anyway, sorry, yeah. Couldn't stop myself. If you loosen that assumption of a linear trend, then, and apply that to the APC model that doesn't impose that, then you actually get a lower mortality improvement, a lower long-term mortality improvement rate for males. It doesn't make any difference for females. So females apparently are actually improving in a relatively linear way regardless. But for the APC model, for the males, you actually get a lower mortality improvement rate in the long term, which is around 1.3. And because 1.3 is also what we got for females, we thought it made a lot of sense to say that this is our estimate, assuming that we take into account some of the slowdown that actually occurred in the last decade of our historical data.
I'm sure, like, there's definitely, as you just mentioned, Kai, like, quite a bit of judgment involved there, sending that long-term assumption. But at the same time, you have sort of came up with this quantitative framework to start the discussion around setting that assumption. And then just for our listeners, and as the report itself does provide some impact analyses with respect to, like, it's just comparing this new scale against the other ones, the MI2017, CPMB, in terms of the life expectancies, as well as sample annuity factors. So definitely something to take a look at.
And I just wanted to comment on that. So the impact analysis is, as you said, some impact analysis at a very high level. It was really outside the scope of our research work to properly apply the scale to a real-life situation, either in Canadian life insurance or Canadian pensions. That's what the CIA members are currently doing. They're doing a more rigorous analysis. There are different stakeholder groups that are engaged in that. So our work was just to give an idea, but I'd encourage everybody who's interested in this to actually take the scale and apply it themselves, whether the differences that we're seeing actually are consistent with what happens when you apply it to your own business. So I think that's very important. And the other important thing as a takeaway for actuaries and listeners, you get a different result if you just take, for every age, if you just take the average mortality improvement rate, just ignoring any cohort effects and ignoring any period effects, just taking the naked improvement rate, you might get a lower result, but by considering the cohort effect, you're actually getting a clearer view of what actually happened. I'm just warning against simple comparisons. You need to control for the cohort effect. And once you've done that, then I think an open debate about what other information to use to set the long-term rate is perfectly reasonable. And that's what we're hoping to encourage, an open debate, as long as people understand the overall framework in which the long-term rate has to be set, which is including a cohort effect in Canadian mortality.
So where do you think the future opportunities lie when it comes to continuing this research on mortality improvement?
Well, what our team has continued to do, so you wrapped up the work for the CIA, and what the CIA also is, I think, interested in pursuing in a different framework is understanding a variety of different things. The current research is very, very interested in how mortality trends differ by cause of death. So the cause of death models are like a very important area of research. Understanding differences in mortality trends by different socioeconomic groups. That's another very important area of research that is relevant to our work here as well. But that was way beyond the scope of our work. And it's very difficult to get useful data for that kind of analysis. But there is some, not necessarily for Canadian population mortality, but for the US, for instance, there's county level mortality that we can investigate. And the third thing, that's something that everybody in this area of research is currently thinking about, talking about, and working on, is finding the right way to incorporate COVID into the trend assumption. Obviously, mortality levels were high during 2021 and 22. Actually, 23 looks to have been fairly high as well in Canada, not necessarily due to COVID, but due to catch up in flu and other things. But understanding how to actually deal with mortality spikes and incorporating those into projections for future mortality, that's a really important area of research that I'm working on, and I'm looking forward to also seeing the results from a lot of other researchers as well.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again for joining us today and giving us this brief and insightful overview of the latest MI research study.
You're very something? Welcome. I just wanted to say thanks.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. And I hope people are encouraged to take a look at the pictures in the report, if not reading it themselves.
And to our listeners, I encourage you to definitely check out the full research report on the CIA website. I would also like to offer a friendly reminder that if you have ideas for a future episode or would like to contribute to the blog, the team at Seeing Beyond Risk would love to hear from you. You may find our contact information in the show notes. This is Pingtang Lin, your host for this episode, and thank you for tuning in to the Seeing Beyond Risk podcast.